You're listening to There Ought to Be a Law, the Center for Auto Safety podcast with Executive Director Michael Brooks, Chief Engineer Fred Perkins, and hosted by me, Anthony Simino. For over 50 years, the Center for Auto Safety has worked to make cars safer.
Welcome, everybody, to Tariff Day? Is it, what is it called?
Liberation Day.
Oh,
what they're calling it, right?
Oui, very French. Yeah, welcome to Liberation Day, where everything costs 25% more. Yeah, today is apparently Liberation Day, and we're starting off with what this means for you, the auto buyer, from an article in the New York Times. I'm going to quote, "But whatever car makers decide, car buyers can expect to pay more for new and used vehicles. Estimates vary widely and depend on the model, but the increase could range from around $3,000 for a car made in the U.S. to well over $10,000 for imported models." How would used vehicles price go up?
I think ultimately you're going to see exactly what we saw during COVID, where the price of used vehicles went sky high through the roof. I mean, if a lot of the people who are in a rush now to get out and buy cars may be doing the right thing. You know, we keep seeing articles about kind of a rush to buy new cars from dealerships. I mean, I think you could make the argument that you should be rushing to buy a used car too. If you have a car that's in a bad state and isn't going to make it for another 3 or 4 years, then you might want to consider changing now while the prices are still somewhat reasonable, because all indications are that tariffs are going to go into effect. The Trump administration doesn't really seem to grasp the interconnectedness of the auto market and just how there is no 100% American made vehicle. I think that's one of the articles we're looking at this week, where you've got vehicles that are made from a combination of parts, even American vehicles that are made by GM and Ford, you know, true blue American manufacturers, are going to be comprised of parts that are being made in Canada, made in Mexico. I mean, the computers that are going into these cars inevitably are going to have chips that are coming in from Taiwan or somewhere else. And there are 40,000 parts on average in a car, right? And so all these parts have to be sourced from various places, and we're not making all of them in America. And the kind of the idea that these tariffs are going to drive all this production to America so that we're going to have truly 100% American made cars is almost borderline absurd, and it's definitely silly. It's just a bad plan, and ultimately I don't think tariffs are going to drive anything but the cost of cars up. Bad for consumers. It's bad for everyone. It's bad for the industry as well. You know, even the Automotive Alliance, who we're often at odds with on safety issues, they have come out and criticized the tariffs and suggested that, you know, it's going to hurt the auto industry because, you know, fewer people are going to be willing to fork out a lot of money on their newer cars. We saw what happened during COVID, where new car sales suffered, used car sales kind of began to dominate. I think we're going to see that again, but this time, you know, we're looking at a market where the average car on the road is older than it's ever been. I think we're approaching 13 years for the average age of a vehicle. And so I think this is just going to be a pocketbook nightmare for consumers. You know, the safety impacts, it's hard to be sure of, but anytime you see supply chain issues, which I'm sure this tariff structure is going to create, you know, there's a chance of poor quality, bad parts, you know, all these things that could ultimately impact vehicle safety as well. But that's not something that's as easily predictable as the fact that your car is about to go up in price by, you know, $3,000 to $12,000, according to some of the estimates we've seen.
But my used vehicle will be worth more? Sweet.
Your used vehicle, it will be like that, I think. Like just like what we saw in COVID, where used vehicle prices are going to skyrocket because people won't be able to afford new cars. And I think the average vehicle in the United States is now around $48,000, $49,000, approaching $50,000.
Oh my God.
Which is out of my price range and out of, you know, the price range for the majority of Americans. So used cars are what we're going to have to turn to. And it's, you know, that's bad. You know, that is bad for safety long term. Because, you know, when all these new technologies are coming out that do add safety to vehicles, better automatic emergency braking, you know, cars with better airbag systems, there's all sorts of things coming out on the market every year that make your vehicle safer. When we're all buying used cars, none of that safety tech is making it out onto the roads. And so it's a step backwards for safety as well.
Liberation Day. From the article in MSN, this is what Michael, you just alluded to. I'm going to quote from it. Even U.S. assembled automobiles by major American brands rely heavily on complex global supply chains for the roughly 30,000 parts, not 40,000, 30,000 parts that make up the average car. Overall, the percentage of auto parts that are sourced abroad hovers around 40%, said Dan Ives, the global head of technology research at Wedbush Securities, a financial services firm. U.S. made cars with all U.S. parts is a fictional tale, Ives said. But the, you know, you mentioned GM and Ford, and I think, you know, we know that they don't matter in this administration. How does this affect the price of a Tesla?
Well, I mean, are people still buying Teslas? What how is their market going? There's so much going on there that I just don't know. I mean, I know that, you know, in Canada a couple of weeks ago, they found out that, you know, someone sold what, thousands of Teslas in a weekend or something. Apparently apparently Tesla is trying to suck up all the money that Canada has put aside for electric vehicle rebates, and these dealerships somehow colluded to empty the pot of the Canadian Canadian rebate system. So
yeah.
They did it, and it was so kind of egregious that the minister in Canada said, you know, Tesla's going to be excluded from the next round of whatever rebates we give on electric vehicles, which is, you know, that's a threat to electric vehicle adoption and all the, you know, environmental loveliness that electric vehicles are supposedly providing the country. But, you know, I haven't seen any indication that the same thing is taking place in America, where we also have some EV rebate structures, unless I can't remember, has the administration eliminated all those yet as well?
I don't know if they have. I think Tesla gets a pass on everything. What do you think, Fred?
I think that the Tesla dealerships in Canada apparently sold one Tesla every 30 seconds over a weekend so that they could exhaust the fund Michael was talking about. And the happened to be coincidental with the exhaustion of the funds that were in that. So something pretty fishy. I think, since you asked, and this is a bit of a rant, that we're engaged in an effort by Trump to reinstate the hereditary aristocracy that we abandoned when the British left and when the slaves were freed. So I think he's really trying to do that by substituting tariff income for the current tax system. Remember, in a tariff-based economy, money flows up, flows from the poor to the rich. It doesn't flow down from the rich to the poor. So the more we head in the direction of tariffs, the less progressive the tax system becomes. So that sort of thing is going on here, ultimately. And in the process, I believe that they're trying to create as much chaos as possible, because that's an old sales technique, right? You have to convince somebody that there's a reason to take action in order for somebody to buy something, right? And well, if you create chaos, widespread chaos, then you can say, well, I'm the only one who can see light out of this chaos. I'm the only one who can help you. So ultimately, I think that's what's going on. Creation of chaos that is irrelevant to any kind of economic incentive in order to allow Trump and his minions to restore hereditary aristocracy in America. I mean, how else can you interpret Musk being allowed to accumulate 200 some odd billion dollars essentially tax-free? End of rant. Sorry.
End of rant, but possible beginning of your prison sentence. So if anyone would like to contribute to Fred's commissary account, go to autosafety.org, click on the donate button, and we'll make sure that Fred gets all the Pop-Tarts he could possibly need.
That's a great segue. Thank you.
As a current amount of zero. So we're talking about this Canadian import thing. Last week, friend of the show and guest, George Iney, mentioned this and brought this up, and apparently the New York Times reporters listened to our show because they wrote an article about it this week. I was talking about how, according to Tesla, what they did is four Tesla-owned dealerships reported to the Canadian government that they sold an astonishing 8,653 cars during a single weekend in January, enough to qualify for $43 million Canadian dollars, about $30 million in real money, worth of government subsidies under our program just before it expires. Now the Canadian government wants to know exactly how the hell they pulled this scam, because all four of those dealers, as Fred said, would have to sell a car every 30 seconds, and the dealerships would have to be open for 24 hours a day, from January 10th to January 12th. The new Canadian prime minister is froze those payments, and he said, "I also don't want to be part of the United States. Go Leafs." So yeah, this is going to be an interesting little investigation, and as just a scam, and that just more of Tesla's built on the backs of the taxpayers, and apparently everywhere. But
Well, I excuse me. I was going to say
sure.
that, but I lost the thought for a second, that this 12-year limit and the concentration on used cars has got real safety issues attached to it. Don't forget, if the average age is 12 years, that means half of the cars are older than 12 years. And cars that are older than 12 years don't have automatic emergency braking. They don't have, in many cases, rearview cameras. They don't have the many features that are built into cars that are more recent. So there's a real safety implication of these tariffs. And by the way, it takes about 10 to 15 years to build a new factory for some of these components and then establish all the supply chain that's associated with getting them up and running. It's not a simple thing. It doesn't happen overnight. So 10 years from now, there may be more manufacturers in the United States if this holds, but many people have their fingers crossed hoping for a change of administration, and all of these economic decisions that are being made can be reversed by the next executive order from the president. Because remember, these are not legislated. These rates are not legislated. These tariffs are not legislated. It's all the personal whim of the current president. So stand by. It's going to be a wild ride.
Unfortunately, I just heard that donations to the Fred Perkins Freedom Fund are now considered treason. But go to autosafety.org and click on donate anyway. Speaking of why we can't criticize Tesla, Elon Musk is wanting to use the power of the US government to stifle anyone who criticizes him and his fake chin and his hair plugs. Quoting from him on a Fox News interview, this is Elon's words, "And the president's made it clear we're going to go after them, the ones providing the money, the ones pushing the lies and propaganda. We're going after them. If anyone would like to contribute to my commissary account."
Well, I mean, here's the thing with that. I mean, this is a good one and something, I'm considering. Maybe I'll make this my gaslight of the week, right?
Oh.
Who is the one human being on Earth who has lied about Tesla more than anyone else? Elon. I mean,
Oh,
he's been
good.
lying for years about Tesla's capabilities in autonomy, full self-driving, autopilot. He's lying through his teeth about the future Tesla robo-taxi and its ability to robo-cab, what do they call it? Its ability to actually function based on the neural net and cameras that he has in the Tesla fleet right now. And I don't think it would be very difficult, although I'm not going to bore listeners with it, tracking every lie Elon has told about Tesla. I mean, the list goes on and on and on forever. He repeats these lies about when full autonomy is coming virtually at every earnings call Tesla has. So, if we're going to start going after people who lie about Tesla, he should be number one on the list.
That is an excellent gaslight, Michael. I'm impressed. With that in mind, I would like to reach out to George Soros because you're obviously going to be accused of funding the words coming out of Michael's mouth, and it'd be great if you actually did fund those words. So this is just for George Soros, since you're going to get tainted with his propaganda. Just pay for it. Fred, are you ready for your gaslight?
Oh, sure.
Okay, fire up.
I have a perennial favorite here, Waymo.
Yay!
There was an article published, apparently funded by Waymo and written by Swiss Re, which is a reinsurance company in Switzerland. And the title of it is "Do Autonomous Vehicles Outperform Latest Generation Human-Driven Vehicles? A Comparison to Waymo's Auto Liability Insurance Claims at 25 Million Miles." Undated study, by the way. And quoting from it, results demonstrate that the Waymo ADS significantly outperformed both the overall driving population, 88% reduction in property damage claims, 92% in injury claims, and outperformed the more stringent latest generation human-driven vehicle benchmark, 86% reduction in property damage claims, and 90% in bodily injury claims. Man, that sounds really good, doesn't it?
It does.
So I decided to dive into it a little bit to find out what was behind that. And w essentially what I found is that
That Santa Claus isn't real.
they said that as the property damage thresholds are different in the standard general order, standing general order, and insurance data, they are not suitable to comparisons. So what this means is they threw out the 241 collisions that have been reported to NHTSA under the standing general order during the extent of the study, and instead they put in their own number, which was 9 collisions. So,
Why even put nine?
well,
I mean, come on, if you're gonna bullshit, just go all out.
so I thought that was pretty good, just take away all the negative information and then discover that you're doing really good. So I'm not an actuary, but I think someone's got some explaining to do. Of course, they can go into the details of the comparisons, and they basically made up a mythical database based on a lot of really challenging assumptions. And basically, if a good comparison might be the safety statistics of chauffeur-driven Bentleys in the same favorable circumstances, rather than the overall population that they kind of made up. Surprisingly, Waymo published the 90% improvement in safety, and they didn't talk about any of the qualifying assumptions that went into this. So I'm giving Waymo my congratulations for this week's Gaslight of the Week nomination.
That is excellent. Fred, you're the winner this week because the correct answer is Waymo.
Yay!
I also am not an actuary, but I can do basic math as I've done numerous times in this show. It will take forever for Waymo to break even. Not gonna happen, folks. Just like GM Cruise didn't break even, wouldn't break even. And the people at GM eventually did the math and realized, holy shit, we've burnt how much money? So this is to the executives at Alphabet. How much money have you burnt? Now look at how much revenue that Uber makes globally. And they don't have to deal with restrictions on AVs. They don't have to do any of that at all. Look how much revenue they make globally. Look how much money you've spent and realize that you would have to take over every city where Uber operates and dominate it before you start breaking even. Do you think that's possible? I didn't think so either.
How do you say pump and dump In Spanish.
El pompo y dumpo.
Yeah,
I wasn't very good at the Spanish. But talking more about the automated vehicles, here's a great article titled "Traffic Deaths Show No Signs of Abating Despite Years of Tech Advances." And I'm going to quote from the opening of this because it's amazing. Traffic crashes killed tens of thousands of Americans and wrought a suicidal mess through city neighborhoods and across fledgling highways, Norman Bel Geddes wrote in 1939. Wow. His antidote, automated driving technology. Wait, what? Back in 1939, this guy was working for GM and he's like, hey, we can put sensors in highways that will guide self-driving cars. It was a big hit at the 1939 World's Fair. And we're almost, what, 90 years later? And people are still trying to sell nonsense. But I liked his approach where you're actually doing kind of a V2X thing and the vehicles are talking to the infrastructure as opposed to today's where it's just like, let's just go. Let's just see what happens here. Michael, I know you have some thoughts about this.
Well, before Michael, let me
Oh,
just
sorry.
ask, was this written before or after the FCC took away all of the bandwidth that was associated with vehicle-to-vehicle communications?
This would be after the date on this is March 24th, 2025. This is what is the publication this is in? Because
It's
unfortunately,
Automotive News. This is part
this
of their 100th
is
anniversary
yeah.
celebration. This and they're looking at this issue.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what we've, yes, in 1939 they were talking about automated vehicle technology. I mean, obviously back then the systems they were talking about probably aren't nearly as advanced as what we talk about when we look at Waymo. But the real issue here and what the article is pointing out is that, there's so much focus on all this added tech in these, AI and the ability for vehicles to use that tech to save lives. But they're not looking at the simple tech that we already have available that can do that now, right? People keep looking, oh, well, autonomous vehicles are going to save, or eliminate traffic deaths in, I don't know, 30, 50 years. Well, we could kill, a third of all traffic deaths today by putting speed governing technology into vehicles that eliminate speeding. The technology is there, it's available, it's cheap, it can go into every car in America. We just don't want it, and manufacturers don't want to put it in their cars because, if you're the first manufacturer who puts it in your cars, the sales of that vehicle are going to drop because people who want to speed aren't going to buy them. So they need to be it needs to be rolled out into every vehicle at once. Similarly, automatic emergency braking, which we've talked about endlessly for the past couple of years, it's not going to be, it's not being, even the industry is fighting having good automatic emergency braking put into vehicles right now. But it's something that could save a ton of lives. Alcohol detection technology that could eliminate, while it's the technology probably isn't there to be able to, get everyone off the road who is at 0.08 or above and driving. It's certainly there to get, 0.15 or higher and some of the worst drunk drivers off the road immediately. So we have a ton of technology that is available that is not being put into cars that could dramatically reduce the fatality and injury rate on our roads. And instead, the industry is focused on driver assistance, convenience systems that don't offer any safety benefits, autonomous vehicles that, the jury is still very much out on as far as this any safety benefits they confer, and not focused on, doing the actual work that could be done today to save lives on the road. And a lot of those re a lot of the reason for that is that there's political problems. People want to speed, apparently, and people want to be able to drive drunk, apparently, and those people's feelings, for some reason, matter a lot to automakers who ultimately are only concerned about how much money they're going to make at the end of the year, and less concerned about what they could be doing with their vehicles to make them safer. And it's I don't see that situation getting any better in the next few years, since even the safety regulations like automatic emergency braking that were on the way to get some of this stuff in place, alcohol detection and intelligent speed assistance, all these things were on the move at NHTSA or even finalized in the case of automatic emergency braking. And the first thing the Trump administration has done is come in and indicate that they're going to get rid of the automatic emergency braking rule. And I can assure you they're not going to be pursuing regulations for intelligent speed assistance or alcohol detection technology. So, we have the ability to do it right now and to drastically reduce the problems we're seeing on our roads, but it's just not happening, and it's somewhat inexplicable from a safety perspective. When we've got 40 some odd thousand people dying on the roads every year, that we're not willing to take those steps.
Fred,
Oh,
does
Michael,
automatic emer-
my
I'm sorry, I this is a very important question. Fred, does automatic emergency braking cause autism? Is that the issue here?
it could very well.
Okay.
But I think the real issue is that all the cars have speedometers, even my humble Subaru have speedometers that go up to 160 miles an hour. And if they put in speed limiters, what are we going to possibly do with all those speedometers that go up to 160 miles an hour? Especially now with the import restrictions and tariffs, that's reducing the speed the cars can drive is going to have an overwhelming impact on the cost of cars because of import restrictions, which I'm sure the Alliance for Automotive Innovation will come out with a press release supporting that view in days.
Okay, so we're gonna have smaller speedometers, and we can get rid of that whole RPM thing because I don't know what the hell that's about. And then we can use that space for advertising. What do you
I think
think, guys?
that's a good plan.
Yeah. All right. Good. All right. That was stupid. I'm sorry for wasting your time. But we all know that autonomous vehicles are gonna save lives, right, Fred? You know this.
In the future, everything will be better.
Great.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the future. There's a company out in China called Xiaomi. I think they used to sell cell phones, but now they also make autonomous vehicles. And this is an article we're linking to from Yahoo News. A disclosure from the company earlier on Tuesday said initial information showed the car was in the Navigate on Autopilot Intelligent Assisted Driving mode. Holy crap, that's what they named it? Before the
That's
accident.
autopilot, basically.
Yeah. Before the accident was moving at 72 miles per hour. In a rundown of the data submitted to local police posted on company Weibo account, which is, I guess, their version of Twitter, Xiaomi said the autopilot system had issued a risk warning of obstacles ahead. A driver inside the car took over and tried to slow it down, but then collided with a cement pole at a speed of 97 kilometers per hour. Unfortunately, three people were killed in this. It's an SUV type vehicle. This is the first confirmed autonomous vehicle
Well,
crime, or is it
it's not an
autopilot's autopilot?
autonomous
Okay.
vehicle, right? So
Their version of
it's
autopilot.
basically this has already happened in the United States many
Right.
times with
Okay.
Teslas and autopilot. It looks like, China is probably going, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, how China's safety regulations are, it seems crazy to even think about this, but that China's safety regulations may be more stringent. And their even their recall and those systems might be more stringent than what we have in the United States, because we've simply fallen so far behind here of the world when it comes to getting safety not only into vehicles but ensuring that vehicles that are on the road are safe and not subject to problems like this, where you have a situation very similar to what we've seen in Teslas, where they've gone off the side of the road and hit concrete structures, or gone off the side of the road and hit fire trucks.
Right.
There's really not a lot of difference here, but it's interesting to watch this and how it proceeds in China, because in the United States, regulators have essentially been sitting on their hands for 7 or 8 years now since some of these Tesla crashes started happening. There was a re autopilot recall that did very little to eliminate this problem. And even worse, Tesla's putting full self-driving, which they've changed the name up to supervised full self-driving now, out, and that's growing as well. And there don't seem to really be any efforts to ensure that it's safe. And so people are continuing to die and to be injured in crashes because they're relying on this. So now we get to see how China addresses the issue and if they do a better job than the United States has.
And the first big difference is the company admits responsibility right off the bat.
Yeah, look at
Like
that.
that's, I mean, that is very anti-MAGA right there. Don't it accept responsibility for your actions?
Well, I've got to submit here that they probably have a shortage of Gaussian
Oh boy, someone wants to jump into the Tao of Fred, don't they?
Well, this
Gaussian,
is
is it
a
Gaussian or Gaussian?
Gaussian. You
Gaussian.
Now I
Gaussian.
know the
Gaussian.
Tao of
Gauss
Fred.
was a mathematician in Germany a long time ago, who's done a lot of great things. So anyway, I'm going to jump right into this. What does Gaussian splatting mean? What it means is the method represents scenes with 3D Gaussians that retain properties of continuous volumetric radiance fields, integrating sparse points produced during camera calibration. It introduces an anisotropic representation using 3D Gaussians to model radiance fields, along with an interleaved optimization and density control of the Gaussians. Okay, you got that?
Did we do
Yeah,
something to
no.
hurt you?
Yeah, my brain stopped in your first couple of words there.
I thought Gaussian splatting was like when you see a squirrel lay down on their belly. Isn't that it? Oh, this
No,
is
no,
heated.
I thought it was an ancient sport involving geese, but
I like that. That's good. All right. So I got to get a little techie here. So when you take a camera photograph or you use your eyeballs to look at something, there are point images or there are points that the focal plane resolves, right? And it's your brain that turns that into a representation of something that's real and organic, right? So when you look at a digital camera, you're actually looking at a bunch of little dots. You're not looking at an image, but your brain interprets that, oh, that's Susie. And it automatically does that. A very sophisticated perception mechanism. So when you use digital cameras or you use LiDARs or something like that to take a picture of any object, what you actually get is a bunch of points. And then you have to somehow in your brain automatically turn that into an image that, it's Susie again, and that's good. But if you're trying to drive a car and all you got is a bunch of points, which points are important for the car? So what happens is the computer takes this, what's called a point cloud, which is just this bunch of data, and it turns it into a representation of a solid object. So it basically pastes little triangles, generally speaking, between the points and says, beyond this, there'll be demons. You cannot go past this little triangle I just created from these several points. Sometimes they use something called a tetrahedron to represent a solid object.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. You're welcome. Anyway, what happens with the Gaussian splatting is that instead of looking at the different points, it says each point has a probability of being in this area. So you get a kind of a bell-shaped curve in two dimensions around it that represents what that point does. And then they combine that with another bell-shaped curve around another point and then mash it all together with mathematics and say, okay, this is what the surface is now. It's not that little triangle, it's kind of a fuzzy little object. Then they spread that over the whole object that's been perceived by the camera. And they say, okay, now this is what the surface looks like. That gives a surface or a barrier for the vehicle so the vehicle can't drive past that fuzzy point cloud. And it works pretty well. What the splatting refers to is being able to take several of those different images, taken from different angles, perhaps, taken at different times, and combine them all into a representation, an improved representation of what that object surface really looks like. So the splatting part just says that you're taking several of these images and you're squishing them together and using that to represent the object as its kind of average among all that sophisticated mathematics.
So this is, I'm gonna jump in so I can make sure I understand. So this is, I'm in my automated Bentley, and I've put my chauffeur on vacation and there's multiple cameras on my Bentley looking forward, backwards, sideways, and maybe it has LiDAR and radar, and I've got and every, we'll say every millisecond, they're all taking photographs and taking range estimates and whatnot, and the Gaussian splatting is combining all of that together as quick as possible. We're like, hey, there's a road, there's a tree, there's a duck, roughly.
Well, yes, except it's not happening in your Bentley. It's happening in a computer somewhere else, running lots and lots of processes. So the mathematical requirements for doing this are too extensive to be put into any individual automobile. Now, NVIDIA is trying to put in supercomputers into the cars, and they're all over this because it requires extensive mathematics. But where we've seen it right now is its use in simulations. So when Volvo is, for example, looking at simulating a self-driving car going down the road, it'll take one of these Gaussian splatted representations and it'll put it in the middle of the road to say, okay, this is my Gaussian splatted representation of a house or a fire hydrant or whatever. And it becomes a solid object they can manipulate in the computer to look at it from different angles as though the vehicle is approaching it from different angles, and getting them improved ability in their minds to simulate the behavior of the vehicle in the real world. Now, you've heard me say this many times, that simulations are doomed to succeed. And in the sense that you keep twiddling with this thing until it gives you the answer that you want, and go ahead and do it. But what they're trying to say is that, well, because we have these images now and they're coming fast and furious and we can do this in a computer, we no longer need to have real live vehicles and real live objects to qualify the safety systems of these self-driving vehicles. Now, I think that's nonsense and it's very hazardous, but this is being offered as another way of streamlining the qualification and validation process for the self-driving vehicles. And it's in Sweden, so it must be good, right? That's where they're doing this. But anyway, that's what the Gaussian splatting is all about. It's just a way of making an improved representation of a physical object using point clouds generated by either cameras or LIDARs. Is that confusing enough, or shall I dive in further?
No.
That makes sense. I mean, essentially, you know, Volvo and NVIDIA have joined together on this project, and they're essentially saying that, you know, we can turn, using Gaussian and splatting, we can take all of the data points we have and use that in simulation and discover edge cases that are going to ultimately make our cars safer.
Right.
Now, you know, who knows? So many people are saying so many different things about the future of safety and autonomy that it's hard to know who's real and who's not. You know, Volvo is long respected as a leader in safety in automobiles. So maybe they've got something here, or maybe they're just jumping into the world of autonomy feet first and, you know, making claims that are somewhat unprovable at this point to attract the attention of buyers and other people. Who knows, really?
Well, then it's important for people to remember that all AI is, in a sense, bullshit in terms of Harry Frankfurt. Okay. It is irrelevant to truth. It's just a representation that looks kind of truthy. And and the truthiness.
So you could say that, yeah, the edge cases they're creating here may be edge cases that exist in the simulation but may not even exist in reality or something like that. I mean, that's certainly
That's right.
Possible,
and the fact that they can generate these things doesn't mean that they can generate images comprehensive enough to represent real live driving safety and real live driving circumstances, even when they're trying to limit it to just certain edge cases. So it's very hazy. It sounds convincing. It can generate really lovely images that you can put on a computer. It really looks convincing. It's truthiness at its best.
That's pretty good. It sounds like my old dating profile. It's speaking of truthiness at its best, let's talk Aurora. You guys remember Aurora? It's a self-driving truck company. By truck, I mean 18-wheelers hauling the big rigs. Well, they've been testing out in Texas, I believe, for the last couple of years, but they've had safety drivers on board, right? And now, from govtech.com, quoting Amy Witherite, founder of the Witherite Law Group and a traffic safety expert in Texas, said that although she applauds Aurora's efforts, she's still concerned about the report's lack of specific details about how often or under what circumstances the company's automation had failed or required human intervention. With literally billions of dollars at stake, it is fair to ask whether companies who will potentially profit from this technology should be the ones who decide whether it is safe to put on our highways. So is this another case of these companies saying, "Hey, I invented something. I'll regulate myself. Thank you very much. Bye."
It's another freedom hater.
Oh yeah, boy. So Aurora, it's so there. Are they, Michael? Are they trying to get rid of their safety drivers?
Yeah, apparently they're going to do that this month. They haven't
Oh.
been clear about the exact date, but they're going to have operations between Dallas and Houston in April, and they've been saying April for many months now. So apparently that's in their plan. Apparently, they haven't finished their safety case, which is essentially what something that I think we advocate for. We're not sure exactly what Aurora's safety case framework looks like and how they're making it because they're not giving the public full access to that. They are publishing, essentially some sort of safety report that kind of at a high level describes their activities, but none of us will ever get to see what's really underneath that because that's protected as a trade secret, I'm sure. And so ultimately, like every other driverless company, we're simply going to have to trust them when driving between Houston and Dallas starting at some point this month in these massive, highways, yes, are safer per mile than, city roads and connecting roads and all sorts of other areas. But, these are also trucks that weigh many, many thousands of pounds. And when something goes wrong, it goes very badly wrong in moments. And so we're nervous about the possibility of a completely driverless 18-wheelers. And if I was driving on the highway between Dallas and Houston in the next few months, I'd probably be nervous as well. But I'd also be kind of intrigued to see one of these things drive past.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about how this will affect country music because a lot of songs are written about I was hauling something all night. Now it's gonna be bleep blop bloop bloop blop. Is that it? Am I being a little too flippant today?
Maybe. I was thinking more like, Smokey and the Bandit reference might be better off there, but who
Oh,
knows?
yeah, hauling green beans.
Just a grim reminder to folks
Oh no.
that a heavy truck going at 70 miles an hour has the same destructive potential as a Hellfire missile fired from 20,000 feet into a building. You've seen a lot of that results in that in Gaza and similar places. So it's not a truck, folks. It's a safety hazard.
Oh my God. If you live in the Dallas Houston area and you want to tell us how often you have to change your underwear, write in at contact@autosafety.org. I mean, I'm fascinated to see how this goes. I still don't understand how it saves money necessarily in terms of getting things on and off the highway to depots. I think it's wishful economic thinking again, but hey, I'm a cynic and not an actuary. Right. Hey, there's a female crash dummies to be used in car safety tests under Katie Britt Bill. U.S. Senator, Republican from Alabama, is the co-signer of the She Develops Regulations in Vehicle Equality and Safety Act. Adorable. The She Drives Act. I'm saying it's adorable because the way they name things is just, I mean, she should work for an auto company. This is put forth in saying, hey, it's a let's update our crash testing dummies, as we've talked about before, so they cover a larger range of people instead of right now where it only covers a range of, what, a 5'10 male who weighs 170 pounds. Did I get that right? Pretty close. Ballpark?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ballpark.
And as we've pointed out, I don't qualify for that, nor does Mr. Perkins.
I may have met somebody like that once, but I can't identify anybody like that right now.
Right. So this is a very good thing. I don't know how the other members of her political party will take to this, but this is good. I mean, because according to NHTSA data, 1,300 women die every year who would have otherwise lived if female death and injury rates were comparable to that of males. Cars are not designed, unfortunately, to protect people who are not 5'10", 170 pounds. It's surprising, but it's true. Michael?
I mean, it just makes complete sense to include dummies that correspond to the different sizes and types of humans that are out there and crashes rather than using a 5'10", 170-pound man. I mean, it's common sense. You know, this is supposedly a bipartisan bill that it's made it through the Commerce Committee in the Senate. And, you know, who knows what would happen to in the House. But, you know, I think, you know, this may be one bill that has a chance. You know, we see a lot of safety bills come and go and never get a vote on the Senate or the House floor. Some of those get wrapped into the infrastructure, every infrastructure bill or every 4 years. This one may have a shot, who knows? And it's something that we would certainly support. You know, I haven't done a deep dive on the bill and reviewed every part of it, but you know, we've continually advocated for getting new dummies into cars and new dummies into different seats in the cars and new dummies that are more representative of the human beings around us into cars, because the data you get from those is going to be invaluable in understanding how to make crashes safer.
Well, that's good. More data, the better.
I'm really hoping for a tall senior dummy, because it would represent me physically as well as intellectually.
Wah, 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 wah.
That's this is why engineers don't do stand up.
Yeah, and you're too tall to do stand up.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Microphone stand doesn't go that high. That wasn't remotely funny, but I, you know, they're not all winners, folks.
It was bad. Yeah, I'll take credit for that.
I'm hoping for a dummy that's shaped like a meatball, so it can help me out.
That's a spicy meatball.
There you go.
Okay, let's do some recalls. Let's start off with a rare entrant because they don't sell a lot of cars. Lucid, 4,294 vehicles. This is their all-weather floor mats without anchor. It doesn't even say the model is actually the floor mats.
Yeah, this is an equipment recall. So wow. It's not the actual cars that are recalled. They basically have these all-weather floor mats that they're selling as basically replacement equipment would be the technical term. But, you know, you walk into your dealer or online at Lucid, I suppose. I'm not sure how many actual dealerships they have. And you buy, you know, a cooler looking floor mat. Well, these don't have anchors on them, and so they can slide up and interfere with your operation of your accelerator pedal. And I'm not sure if they have had any crashes related to this, but they had a Lucid sales associate driving a Lucid vehicle with these floor mats in it, and he suspected that the accelerator pedal was stuck. And even though they weren't able to reproduce that, they took a look at it, put their product safety working group in it, and they found that this could happen. So this is very similar to what, you know, we've seen a number of recalls over the years with bad floor mats. I think Toyota, sudden acceleration, there were some recalls around the floor mats in those vehicles. And it's something that comes up occasionally. I mean, I recommend to everyone, when you're buying floor mats, make sure that they're anchored, because if your floor mat can move around, there's always a potential for a problem and interference with your accelerator. So it's kind of a good thing from Lucid. You know, Lucid hasn't always been on our good list over here, but for some of the things that they've done, but you know, this looks like a recall that they moved on pretty quickly and got done. And it hopefully will be, hopefully they'll be able to track down everyone who's purchased these floor mats. That's always a problem when you don't have a consumer that's attached to a car, in registration records. It becomes a little more difficult to administer a recall when you're having to go after aftermarket parts, where you don't necessarily have the same paper trail between the purchaser that you would in a car purchase.
What are anchors? Because I mean, I'm just thinking my floor mats, they just got, on the underside, they've got like little spiky things that kind of dig into the carpeting.
Yeah, that could be
Is
one
that
way
it?
of
Okay.
anchoring it, but in my Volkswagen, each of the four corners or so of the floor mat have a what looks kind of like a snap or a button where you physically attach the floor mat to the floor of your vehicle. And I have a floor mat that I've had cars with floor mats that continually slide up under the accelerator pedal. That gets, that seems very concerning, and it's something that everyone should check when they're getting to their cars,
Yes,
floor mat position.
and we know this is a big trend on TikTok. Stop buttering the underside of your floor mats. It's the trend is on out. It was fun for a little bit, not anymore. Next up, Volvo, 7,483
Wait a
vehicles.
minute, you thought my
What?
joke was bad. Yours is far worse.
Yeah, but Michael laughed at my joke, okay? Yeah. I don't know. Huh? Okay, so Volvo, 7,483 vehicles. The 2020 to 2022 Volvo S60, the V60, the V90, the S90, the XC, a whole bunch of them. Are they all hybrid electrics? Is that the issue here?
Yeah, they're all hybrid.
There is a short circuit in the high voltage battery module, which increased the risk of fire. We see this happen quite often, where there's all these little things where it's like, yeah, there's a mismatch, there's a voltage issue. What's going on here?
Well, I mean, the root cause analysis that they conducted apparently identified a problem with their supplier that leads to a risk of an internal short circuit in certain battery cells within the battery module. That could be almost anything, right? But that's all we're really getting. But apparently it leads to overheating the battery cells when the battery is fully charged and the vehicle is parked, which is critical to what the warning that's been issued along with this recall is, a do not charge warning. So apparently what you don't want is apparently you cannot you're they're telling you not to charge your hybrid electric vehicle. We've seen this in a couple of other recalls where essentially you've purchased a hybrid, but you've got an internal combustion engine until you can get this recall performed, because you're not allowed to charge your car. So it looks like owners are going to be notified in mid-May. I don't know that the remedy is going to be available yet then. It's kind of, we've seen these battery recalls tend to take a little longer to figure out repairs for and to get those repairs out to consumers. I think we saw a Chrysler, was it Pacifica, minivans that customers had to wait about a year and not charge their, basically not use the plug-in charging part of their hybrid vehicle for a year while they waited on those recall repairs to come out. So hopefully the Volvo folks will get theirs a little quicker.
Okay. This one is not a recall, but it is a fix. Ooh,
Whoa.
Nissan.
Yeah.
Come on. I know Michael's very excited about this one. Do it.
Speaking of delayed fixes, this is one that just is mind-boggling. Nissan did a recall in 2022, because they had hoods that were popping open while the vehicle was in motion, and it has taken them 3 years to roll out a fix for that problem. I don't know that anyone can explain what has taken them so long. In fact, I think that this is an area that NHTSA should have cracked down on Nissan a long time ago and given them significant fines for the recall delay here. I don't know why NHTSA hasn't opened up a recall query into this and pushed Nissan or even use civil penalties to incentivize Nissan to get its act together on this recall, but a hood latch fix is not something that should take any auto company 3 years to put onto the market.
Crazy. And by vehicle in motion, you mean you're driving down the road and then, oh my God,
and your hood pops up. Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Final recall from General Motors, a frequent participant of the recall roundup section. 10,643 vehicles, the 2025 Cadillac Lyriq. This is interesting. Ooh, apparently their manual has typos. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I mean, if you're driving one of these vehicles, you know, your car, there's nothing wrong with your car. The problem is the owner's manual, where they have included what appears to be the image they included of the head restraint in your vehicle is incorrect. So they basically put the wrong picture in of the rear outboard head restraint. And because of that, they violated FMVSS 202A, which covers head restraints. You have to have an accurate description of your head restraints in the owner's manual, or you're gonna not be in compliance with federal regulations. And so these owner manuals will not be getting a repair for their car. They'll be getting a owner's manual insert that they can pop into their owner's manual.
Wow. And with that, listeners, that's our show. And if I've managed to do it successfully, you'll be listening to in the background right now the what is it called? The Vietnamese March of Liberation. Because in honor of Liberation Day, we're playing the March of Liberation by Lu Nguyen and Long Hung of North Vietnam from 1966. Because it's Liberation Day, folks.
Wow.
I can't wait to hear it. It sounds wonderful.
I really hope I can figure this out. There might be dragons indeed. All right. Thanks, everybody. Till next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
For more information, visit www.autosafety.org.